I tell you, it's simply wonderful, the communication that we have these days. During the Feast of Tabernacles, I was able to speak to you the opening day, and again on the final, last great day, all of the churches, all of the camps, feast sites, that is, all over the United States and all over Canada, and then the first day to England also and Hawaii, and last Sunday, or last Sabbath, I should say, not Sunday, a week ago today, I spoke from Jerusalem to the church in Pasadena. It was night in Jerusalem, but I spoke to the morning church in Pasadena, and there they recorded what I said, and it was replayed again for the afternoon service in the auditorium in Pasadena. Now, 2 weeks ago, we had a great meeting of the brethren in London. I think there were brethren only from around the London area. I don't think the brethren came down from up in northern England or Scotland or North Ireland, but there were a few who came over from Germany and other countries on the continent of Europe, and we had more than 1,000, and I thought they had gotten the message that I gave on the last great day of the feast. I found out they had not. And the ministers there asked me to give them that same message, and so I gave that to them 2 weeks ago today. And we had a wonderful meeting there in London, over 1,000 of our people. I don't know how many of you are out in New York, but I would guess that there must be 1,000 or more of you there listening right now. Now, the following Monday night, after speaking in London, I spoke, and that was just the following Monday from the Sabbath, the day after tomorrow, you might say. I spoke to a very large banquet in Cairo. I spoke for a half hour or longer, and there were about 300 or more there. It was a large banquet, many, many tables with about 8 or 9 or 10 seated at each round table, and many of the tables filling a great grand ballroom. And they were the top people of Egypt. And I spoke quite a while to them. Then at Jerusalem last Monday, I had a good private meeting with Prime Minister Begin. I was accompanied, of course, as I always am, by Mr. Rader, and also the mayor of Jerusalem, Teddy Kollek, mayor of Jerusalem. And by the way, he had been speaking on the national network, the ABC network, from New York just about 10 days before. But he was back in Jerusalem, and he went along with us to the prime minister and the prime minister's office. And incidentally, Prime Minister Begin was in a very important meeting in Tel Aviv. Now, it's a one-hour automobile drive from Tel Aviv on up to Jerusalem. Jerusalem, you know, is up higher. It's about 2,250 feet elevation, whereas Haifa's right down on the seashore. And the prime minister left his meeting with several important people in Tel Aviv. He drove an hour to come to Jerusalem to have the personal meeting with me, and then another hour's drive back, and for that 2.5 hours or a little more, he just left his people of his important meeting in Tel Aviv just waiting for him. And I mentioned how sorry I was that he had to come and all of that thing and come out of the meeting and come all that distance to get to see and talk to me. He said, "Mr. Armstrong, I would get up in the middle of the night to talk to you." Well, that sort of warmed my heart a little bit, too. Now I'm to have a meeting next Tuesday with President Sadat of Israel. Now, I know you've all, of course, read a great deal about how President Carter got Mr. Begin of Israel and the Prime Minister and President Sadat of Egypt together at the White House and up at the at Camp David. and got them together and had them photographed together with him and all of that. Well, I'm not going to get to have them photographed together with me because Mr. Sadat will be in Cairo while Mr. Begin is in Jerusalem. But I tell you what I am going to do. And I already have the permission of President Sadat for it, and I told this to Mr. Begin, and he was glad to have me do it. He said, that will be fine. I'm going to give them a cover story on the plain truth, and I don't know whether it'll be possibly the February number. I don't know just which number. It could be March, but I think probably February. I will have the two of them pictured on the front cover of The Plain Truth. And then I'm going to write quite an article and about my meetings with them and about the whole situation in the Middle East. Now, that is the boiling pot of the whole world right now. That's where the trouble spot is. Not anywhere else. It is there. And I know the world has been looking on the United States the last few days because just, what was it, 3 days ago, 4 days ago, we had the election. And incidentally, I'd like to say a few things about that. Now, the governments of this world are all the ideas of human men. What Adam and Eve did in the Garden of Eden, they took to themselves from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Instead of letting God give them the knowledge of what is good and what is evil and tell them what is sin and what is righteousness, they said they would decide for themselves. They would manufacture the knowledge in their own minds of what they thought was good and what they think is evil. So their children are the world. You look at the whole world today, 4 billion people and more. And, you see, last December I was speaking to the top leaders of 1/4 of all of those people in China. And one of the vice chairmen in China, there are 2 vice chairmen and a chairman who run the government in China. And I was speaking to one of the 2 vice chairmen, and they are molding the thought, the thinking, the believing of 1/4 of all of the people on earth, 1 billion people. That is a lot of people. God has opened doors for me to see more heads of government, more presidents, more chairmen, prime ministers, more kings than any other man in the world. Nobody else except Mr. Rader, who always goes with me, has ever seen as many. I have seen them in South America. I've seen them all over Europe. I've seen them in South Africa, in West Africa, in East Africa, in North Africa. I have seen them in the Middle East. And I know the Arab leaders. I know King Hussein. I know President Sadat. I know the president, or who was the president, but he still really acts as president, though he officially resigned, of Lebanon, and spent a day with him in his mountain home up in the mountains. That's before the great trouble in Beirut, and Beirut has been practically destroyed by all that trouble that has happened since. But I did have quite a whole day's visit with the president there. And with those in Asia, with the emperor of Japan, with the head people of China, with the top people in Korea, and with the president of South Vietnam before he had to move out and the communists took over, and so it goes. Now, just day before yesterday, Mr. Rader and I had luncheon once again with King Leopold III of Belgium. He's a very dear friend of mine. He's been a guest in my home out in Pasadena, and I had not seen him now in almost 4 years. And it was nice to see him and his wife in their home. It's a chateau, and incidentally, they are living at or just adjacent to Waterloo. Now, Waterloo is where Napoleon had his final defeat. They call it his Waterloo, as they say. Well, that's where Napoleon was finally destroyed and the government that he had had of the so-called Holy Roman Empire. Now that's what we're expecting next over here in Europe, is that there will be a union of 10 nations going together in Europe, and the Pope at Rome will sit on top of the whole heap. There will be one man over all of the governments. There will be a king, or I don't know, they may call him a president, a prime minister, whatever term they give him, I don't know, over each one of the 10 nations. Now, I did think that Belgium and Sweden and Norway and countries like that would be in it. And I have sort of changed my mind a little bit. You see, the Bible doesn't tell us just which nations. The Bible only tells us there will be 10. And it doesn't tell us which, and so I can't know. But now I'm beginning to think that the Polish Pope may bring Poland in. And they're having labor trouble right now. It's in this morning's newspapers right over here in Paris. There's going to be another labor trouble in Poland. And as you know, that Romania is not really very enthusiastically with the Soviet, and neither is Yugoslavia. And I can begin to see some of those nations breaking loose from the Russian orbit and going in. And instead of the Scandinavian nations, they will go in with France and Germany and with Spain and Portugal and Italy and form the 10 nations with the Roman, and that will be the same territory that was occupied by the old Roman Empire. That is coming along. Now I have, as I said, a meeting scheduled in Cairo on next Tuesday with President Sadat. And incidentally, our whole television crew are over here, and they will be on Monday getting in, getting their cameras all set up and everything for this, as they did, and we were completely photographed in the meeting with Prime Minister Begin of Israel. And I am doing what I can to help bring about peace between these nations. But I tell you, brethren, there is not going to be any peace until Christ comes and gives us all peace in the government of God. The governments of the world today are on a competitive basis. Everybody is living in a competitive manner, one person against another. In sports, it's all competition. In politics, it's all competition. Brethren, let me tell you something. You may not realize this. I have said it before, but maybe you didn't quite get it. Do you know who first started this idea of taking polls of public opinion? Do you know who started it, who the real starter, the founder of that was? It was myself. I did it back in the year of 1915, and that's before a great many of you were born. And I did it for a national magazine. And I can show you yet copies of that national magazine publishing that report of merchandising and retail conditions in the little town of Richmond, Kentucky. Then I made another survey up in Lansing, Michigan. And after that, I made surveys in other cities. And I started this thing of making surveys of public opinion, and let me tell you, I have known all along, and I was writing newspaper editorials on a newspaper back in 1932. And I was showing that the polls were not predicting who would win the election that year, and they didn't. You remember that was the year that FDR, Franklin Roosevelt, was running against Hoover. And the poll said it was about even. And I knew it was not going to be even because I'd said the polls are not accurate. You know why? They don't know how to do it. They don't get information from a large enough percentage of all the people. And they don't get information from the right percentage of each block. For example, in the vote, We have the Catholic vote, the Jewish vote, and the Protestant vote. We have the black vote, the white vote, the capital vote, and the management vote, the labor vote. We have this vote and that vote. Well, you've got to know what percentage of the people are in each group and how they go. And they don't do that. They just take a few here and there. And they don't know how to take a poll. But I did start all this poll business, regardless, myself, and I know something about it. Well, I won't take time because I know there is going to be a sermon, and Dr. McCarthy is there, I understand, today, and I don't want to take up his time. So I'm going to stop right here. I'm sure you all know, I must say a little something. The state of California has dropped the lawsuit against God's Church. I'm sure you all know that. And there will be something about it, of course, in the Plain Truth and in the worldwide news. And I just sent something in that I just finished writing since I've been here in Paris, and where we're just stopping off so that we can go up and see King Leopold and have lunch with him. And then we're on our way tomorrow back to Cairo, Egypt, for the meeting with President Sadat. Now, I'll get to you in New York when I can, but the governments in this world are all influenced on the idea of get. Now, every vote group, I mentioned all these groups in the vote, every group wants to get what is right for them to get for their interest. They don't care what happens to anyone else. What about the politicians? Well, they want to get the vote. They just want to get the power. And that's what it was in the lawsuit against the church. There was the Attorney General of California. He wants to be the governor. He wants more power. He's going to run for governor next time. Well, his lawsuit against us didn't advance him like he thought it would. It hurt him. Anyhow, we did have a little something to do, without playing any politics, we had a little something to do with the California legislature making void the law on which the Attorney General based his whole lawsuit. He was going to take over our church, and if we went, every other church would have been taken over by the governor or by the government of California. But now he doesn't have a leg to stand on, so he dropped the lawsuit, and we have won a great victory there. But always there's the ecstasy of winning, the agony of losing. President Carter and his wife Rosalind went into a room, and in an agony they burst out in tears and they just cried aloud. It was so hard. And of course Mr. Reagan is all up in ecstasy. And I had to think, 4 years ago Mr. Carter and his wife Rosalind were in ecstasy, and President Ford and his wife were in agony. And they were probably crying tears because they lost. Now, did that spoil the ecstasy of President Carter? No, I don't think it did. He was so happy that he won, he didn't care if it did hurt them, or is that true now? I know that's a pretty strong statement, but just think about that a minute. That is the way Satan has got into all of us. He's got it into our minds. We don't care what happens to the other fellow. The average person says, well, I don't feel that if he suffers, that isn't making me suffer. I'm not suffering. What do I care if the other guy suffers? Brethren, in the kingdom of God, we're going to care if the other man suffers, and we're going to try to keep the other man from suffering. We're going to try to have all of us enjoy the ecstasy and nobody having to enjoy the agony. You know, our troubles in this world are all spiritual, and people don't know that, and they can't think spiritually because they don't have a spiritual mind. And you can't have a spiritual mind without the Holy Spirit of God, and the people in the world don't have that. So until Christ comes, and until he sets up the government of God, and incidentally, the only place in the world where for hundreds and hundreds of years where the government of God has been effective is in our church right now. And the government of man was trying to destroy that government. God didn't let them destroy it, and we have won that great victory. God is still on his throne, and don't you ever forget it. Well, brethren, I'll come and see you when I can. I can't tell you when that'll be. I don't know whether it'll be next month or next year or longer. I need to go so many places. I need to see so many of our brethren and churches. I'll get to you when I can. I do think of you. I pray for you daily, brethren. I think of you a lot, and I need your prayers. So I'm going to turn everything over now. I'm taking some of Dr. McCarthy's time, and I mustn't take any more. Thanks for letting me talk to you from Paris, France. It's afternoon here. It'll soon be dark. And the day is almost spent over here. The Sabbath day is gone. We're still going to have another little Bible study before sunset. And so you go ahead and have your service there. So bye-bye, everybody. God bless you all.